This week, Vice President Joe Biden's Gun Violence Task Force has been meeting in Washington to discuss a set of proposals. How do you think our society can curb gun violence? River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Biden is expected to offer the task force's recommendations to the president by Tuesday. And as the Iowa legislative session approaches, there are efforts in the state to alter Iowa's gun laws. My guests this hour, Jeff Burkett, president of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, Reverend Carlos Jane, coordinator and lobbyist for Iowans for Gun Safety, and Brian Gardner, the sheriff of Linn County. What changes in gun regulations would you propose? Reducing gun violence after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Yesterday, the National Rifle Association said it was disappointed with the results of a meeting with the Gun Violence Prevention Task Force led by Vice President Joe Biden. These are some of the words from a statement that the NRA wrote after that closed-door meeting with administration officials and other gun groups. We were disappointed with how little this meeting had to do with keeping our children safe and how much it had to do with an agenda to attack the Second Amendment, wrote the NRA. We will not allow law-abiding gun owners to be blamed for the acts of criminals and madmen. That from the NRA. During the news conference a week after that shooting, the tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, NRA President Wayne LaPierre offered steps the NRA would like to see taken on preventing gun violence in schools.
Before we engage in any lengthy debate over legislation, regulation, or anything else, as soon as our kids return to school after the holiday break, we need to have every single school in America immediately deploy a protection program proven to work. And by that, I mean armed security.
Now, Vice President Biden has been charged with leading a series of gun reform meetings. You've heard about them this week in the news in the wake of this Newtown school shooting. Speaking at a conference about an hour before he met with the NRA yesterday, Vice President Biden revealed several policy measures he may be passing on to the president by next Tuesday, including universal background checks, as well as some restrictions on high-capacity magazines.
Not just close the gun show loophole, but total universal background checks, including private sales. I'm putting together a series of recommendations for the president that he will take a look at. There's a real, very tight window to do this.
Biden mentioned that other stakeholder groups have expressed surprising support for these proposals. He says the task force's recommendations will be ready and forwarded to the president by Tuesday of next week, and that the president is going to take some action. Well, we just heard from the NRA leader. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. This past Wednesday at the State House State of the State address in New York, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed some sweeping gun control policies for his state, including enacting some of the toughest assault weapon ban in legislation in the nation, closing the private sale loophole, requiring federal background checks, banning high-capacity magazines, enacting tougher penalties for illegal gun use on school grounds and in violent gangs, keeping guns from mentally ill, banning direct internet sales of ammo in New York, creating a state with a check on ammunition purchases. Here's more from New York Governor Andrew Cuomo.
And the madness now. Pass safe, reasonable gun control in the state of New York. Make this state safer. Save lives. Set an example for the rest of the nation. Let them look at New York and say, this is what you can do, and this is what you should do.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this week in his State of the State address. Here in Iowa, as the Iowa legislative session approaches, there are efforts in the state to alter Iowa's gun laws, either by tightening or loosening restrictions on buying and carrying firearms. This hour, we want to explore possible remedies to gun violence with several guests and with you. What changes in gun regulations would you propose? Which laws would curb gun violence, increase safety in our communities, and respect the right to bear arms in our Second Amendment? We want to hear from gun owners, from hunters, from those who keep guns for personal safety. What are your thoughts? Are we safer with more guns? With fewer? 1-866-780-9100. You can contact us also via email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Now, there are many facets of this discussion of reducing gun violence. Mental health, media violence mentioned here, to name two main ones. This hour, we want to focus mainly on possible changes to gun laws. And in the near future here on River to River, we'll be focusing primarily on the mental health aspect as such and media aspects of this debate. With that being said, let me introduce our guests for this hour. Jeff Burkett is with us in our Des Moines studio. He is the president of the Iowa Firearms Coalition. Welcome to our program, Jeff.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate you having me on.
And to be clear, we're glad you're here. To be clear, the Iowa Firearms Coalition is affiliated with the NRA, correct?
That is true. We are one of the Iowa affiliates with the NRA. There's also Iowa State Rifle Pistol Association. But our organization is the primary organization in the state that focuses on the legislative issues and works in tandem with the NRA efforts here in Iowa.
Okay, very good. With you in the Des Moines studio, the Reverend Carlos Jane, coordinator and lobbyist for Iowans for Gun Safety. Reverend Jane, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much.
And joining us by phone, Brian Gardner. He is the sheriff of Linn County to give us a law enforcement perspective. Brian, hi to you.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Let's start with you, Jeff Burkett, as the president of the Iowa Firearms Coalition. We just heard a long list that Andrew Cuomo listed. You've no doubt in the past few days heard a whole bunch of different suggestions as far as gun control. Is there anything along these lines that you could support in terms of a change to gun law in this country, in this state?
Well, first of all, let me just reiterate a point or a comment that I think all of us can agree on and share, that our hearts and prayers go out to the people that lost loved ones in the Newtown Massacre. This is certainly an issue that is obviously at the forefront of our nation right now, and it's close to the hearts and minds of all of us because we all have family and we all have loved ones and we hate to see these type of things. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, you know, we are interested in having I was actually optimistic when President Obama came out and addressed the nation after the Newtown massacre and addressed the nation in the context of our children, and he referenced a passage in the Bible about how precious the children were to Jesus. And children are precious to us. It's human nature, and we want to protect them. But I was equally disappointed alongside the NRA with the meetings that have happened here in January, because it doesn't seem like we're opening and engaging in a conversation about anything other than looking at this as gun violence and a problem with an object, when really I think what we're talking about is something much deeper.
So even the term gun violence is something that you would take issue with?
Well, absolutely. I mean, let's just go back to December for a moment, and we had the Newtown shooting, the Newtown massacre. We had four attempts around the world. Mass killing attempts that week, one of which was in Oregon. It was not a gun-free zone. The killer was confronted by a permit holder, and the conflict ended as he went and committed suicide. Mm-hmm. We had an issue in Texas, again, not a gun-free zone. A killer was confronted by an off-duty cop who was able to end the conflict with deadly force. And then, of course, the Connecticut massacre that we're all very familiar with from the news media. And then the fourth one was in China, a gun-free country, where a killer knifed 22 children.
Mm-hmm. I guess what we're talking about is someone, as in the Newtown massacre, able to kill so many people so quickly with such an efficient weapon. I guess that's what we mean by gun violence and the problem that most people say. Let me ask you this more broadly. Have these mass shootings, Newtown, Aurora before that, the list goes back and back over the last few years, has it changed the thinking of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, this renewed concern for what's happening with our guns?
No, because, again, we don't perceive the issue as being the object of the firearm. When you do a study on the history of these types of slayings, and I don't like even using the term shooter or shooting, because these aren't shooters and people shooting. You know, we have hunters out there that are shooters.
But the Newtown young man was a shooter. He had a weapon and he shot, so he's a shooter, right?
Well, by pure definition of the term, anybody that shoots a firearm is a shooter. But the problem is what we're talking about here is massacres. We're talking about loss of life. And when you do a study historically of these type of events, they're not limited to shooting. They're not limited to guns. And certainly even in the grand when you tally the grand total number of deaths and wounded inflicted, your most severe ones are not always firearms related.
Okay. The NRA head, Wayne LaPierre, said after these Newtown killings that the only way to prevent such events is the presence of armed security officers in every school. Quote, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. This is something that you stand up for Iowa schools, having armed security officers?
Yeah, we back the NRA's program and their approach. I think and Sheriff Gardner can speak to this. But, you know, we're in a situation here in the United States where our cops, our law enforcement are trained to kill children if they are armed in these situations. And that's a really sad place for us to be in. Where we're actually, you know, I think we learned our lesson after Columbine. There was a shift in mindset with how we approach these incidents. It used to be you build a perimeter and then you went in and you almost treated it like a suicide person. And now the mindset has shifted within the law enforcement training where they are trained to as soon as the sheriff can speak to how their department trains, but in a lot of incidents, once they have two law enforcement officers on scene, they go in and they take out the threat and try to eliminate the impact that threat is causing on innocent life.
Okay, let's go to Brian Gardner, sheriff of Linn County, and have you speak for yourself, Sheriff Gardner, in the wake of this latest tragedy in Newtown. What are your thoughts as someone in law enforcement about how things might be changed, the remedy for the deaths?
Well, I think very clearly that our primary concern needs to be able to find better ways to keep weapons out of the hands of people who clearly should not possess them, either because of a criminal background or because of mental instability. So I think that's truly the issue that needs to be resolved first and foremost.
Wider background checks, more stringent background checks, also including the mentally ill.
That is correct. As you know, Iowa has moved into a shall issue concept when it comes to weapons permits, handgun carry permits. And unfortunately, most all of the discretion has been taken away from the sheriff. And literally, there are just a finite amount of prohibitors that would allow a sheriff to deny a permit. The problem is we still have the ability, we're still forced into issuing permits who, in our viewpoint, mentally create concerns for us to issue weapons. They may not have been adjudicated as mentally incompetent, which is a requirement of the law, but the family has contacted you and said, oh, the last thing you want to do is give mom or dad or my brother or relative, whoever, a weapons permit. And currently, there are very few prohibitors that would allow us the ability to deny that type of issuing that type of permit.
Okay, that seems to be a disagreement with Jeff Burkett, but what about the thought that Jeff Burkett said about having armed officers in every one of Iowa's schools, as suggested by the NRA head Wayne LaPierre?
Sure. I think, as has been found in previous discussions, this is going to be fairly costly in order to be able to implement. I know many jurisdictions have school resource officers. Whether they're assigned full-time to a school or not remains to be seen. I know that Linn County has a school resource officer, but we don't actually assign that officer full-time to the schools. He travels throughout the school districts during his work day. So in order to actually put a law enforcement officer in all of the schools in all of the districts in these states, I think would be fairly costly.
So costly equaling unrealistic, is that what you're saying?
Well, at least at this point in time, there would certainly have to be the ability to fund that type of activity. I know that we here in Linn County would not be able to pay for that out of our existing budget. Of course, we're going into budget time now, but I would not be able to afford to put an armed deputy sheriff in every school in Linn County.
Yeah, you mentioned wider background checks. What about stricter gun laws being discussed, banning high-capacity weapons and magazines? How do you stand on that?
Well, I'm not really sure, quite honestly. I'm anxious anxious to see what happens at both the federal and state level. As I understand it, reading the Register yesterday, the local legislators at the Iowa level may be kind of taking a break to see what the feds impose, because obviously they'll have a broader reach of their authority. So I think that myself and my other sheriffs in the state are just kind of sitting back waiting to see what may be proposed, mm-hmm. what would or would not be workable. I think if they were to do enact a ban and actually do a confiscation, I'm concerned about the ability for that to logistically to occur, just because there are so many weapons that are already out there. I think to actually confiscate those weapons under a true ban would have some real logistical nightmares for local law enforcement.
Brian Gardner, I want to move on to Reverend Carlos Jane, but as we talk to you today and hear your thoughts, I wonder if you represent what you feel is a common view among law enforcement in Iowa, or is there a spectrum of opinion among law enforcement that is as wide as there is among the general public in the U.S.?
I think it's probably the latter. However, I think this is more of a concern for the sheriffs, because the sheriff, by state code, have the obligation to issue the carry permits for handguns. Other law enforcement officers may certainly have an opinion, but I think it more directly affects the sheriffs, because they're the ones responsible for issuing the permits. And to ask, is my opinion just my opinion? Well, yes, that's true. I do serve on the executive board of the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association. In fact, I'm co-chair of their legislative committee this year. But quite honestly, we have not yet met for this legislative session. We do that next week, and I'm not sure where our discussion will lead related to this particular issue.
So you don't have any things you see as materializing as concrete proposals from law enforcement, from the sheriffs?
Probably not at this particular time, no.
Let's touch bases with the Reverend Carlos Jane, United Methodist minister in Des Moines. You are a coordinator and lobbyist for Iowans for gun safety. Mention what your group is quickly, and tell us your thoughts on the national discussion, the state discussion that's been started since the tragedy in Newtown.
Well, Iowans for Gun Safety started as a response to laws that have been proposed back in 2010 by the gun lobby, which we consider to be onerous, and then the several massacres, including the Newtown massacre, after which a lot of us shed a lot of tears. And as far as whether or not gun violence continues, 34 persons on average, according to the Mayors Against Illegal Guns, 34 persons are murdered each day. 50 die by suicide, and that continues to this day, by gun. What we're going to be encouraging is that we want to seek reasonable laws and policies for reducing this gun violence. What we're going to do is encourage people, rather than to become members of our group, to go back and get their own organizations, and particularly churches, interested in doing something about addressing this issue. We think that universal background checks are something that is absolutely necessary. We don't want any internet buys. We think that there ought to be some kind of limitation on ammunition purchases and a limit on the ammo magazines. We certainly agree with everybody, including the gun lobby, about the need for improving the mental health services. But that doesn't mean that we don't address these issues that have to do with the proliferation and the continued expansion of usage of guns in our society. Because it builds a gun culture. It builds a culture that encourages people to settle things by using your gun if necessary. That's where this Stand Your Ground legislation comes in, that's been proposed by gun lobbies throughout the country, and which has been sent around the country by this group called ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which has wording for everybody to consider, and which they put in Florida, and we're up against a case right down there now. We don't want this kind of stuff. What we want to do is concentrate on people's ability to protect themselves in their homes, support the Second Amendment in that way, but not have it expand to the point where we are making kind of a battleground of the whole culture, the whole society, by having guns everywhere, guns by anyone that wants them, and purchase all kinds of guns and all kinds of ammunition, anything that you want. And that is what we fear the gun lobby is seeking, to have.
Reverend Jane, let me ask you this. As the coordinator and a lobbyist for Iowans for Gun Safety, do you see this year, in this legislative session, a real chance of a sea change in attitudes among legislators you've spoken with? And if so, what legislation do you see as a chance of getting through?
So far, I don't see that. You didn't see it with the governor either. He hasn't come out with anything that had respect to this. The fact that we have divided government in the state, with the Democrats having control of the Senate and the Republicans the House. Last year, the House, controlled by the Republicans, passed a resolution for a constitutional amendment. And the Stand Your Ground legislation, both of which are very, very difficult bills, and they did not even get a reading in the Senate, which is something we agreed with. And probably the same thing will happen this year, that not possibly, you know, bad stuff will get through, but possibly the anything to address the issue will not get through, with the possible exception of improving mental health services, which is something that we've been working on anyway. But let's face it, improving mental health services is not a quick fix. It's not going to reduce this number of 34 murders and 50 suicides daily until a long time to come, because mental health services cost a lot of money. Okay. Changing our possible mental health services in Iowa is going to take a lot. And we've so far been very reluctant to provide all that is necessary for that.
Okay, a lot of people want to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps we can get one or two calls in before the break. Gene is in Iowa City. Hi, Gene.
Yeah, hi. I've called before about this topic, but I find that the since they had the shall carry rule in Iowa, shall issue, a lot of businesses have posted no weapons signs. And I want some clarification from the sheriff and the person from the Iowa Gun Association there on the responsibility of the permit holder in knowing whether a business or a county has banned weapons from their property. And for example, the Costco in Coralville bans weapons, but there are no signs. It's
okay.
Only on their website.
We're coming up on a break. I want to get an answer for
okay.
you. Gene, let's go to Brian Gardner. I think you're the best, Sheriff Gardner, on this, too. What is the responsibility of a permit carrier when you're carrying a weapon in public?
Sure. If the property owner has a sign posted, no weapons, then it's your obligation to make sure the weapon is left outside of that establishment. If there is no signage, but you are later contacted by the establishment owner and asked to leave the establishment because you do carry a weapon, then your requirement is to leave. There is no gun law violation. The charge that would be filed would be a purely criminal trespass.
Okay. Jeff Burkett, anything to add to that before we go to a break quickly?
No.
Okay, nothing. Let's continue our discussion after a short break. Joining us this hour, the president of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, an NRA affiliate here in Iowa, Jeff Burkett, in our Des Moines studio, along with Reverend Carlos Jane, who is a United Methodist minister in Des Moines, coordinator and lobbyist for Iowans for Gun Safety, Brian Gardner, Sheriff Gardner of Linn County. Join us with your thoughts, your perhaps a remedy. Where do you see common ground? Is that what we need? How do you curb the deaths due to guns in this country? 1-866-780-9100. And when we come back, more of your calls, more discussions. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So nice to have you with us over the noon hour on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, Vice President Joe Biden's Gun Violence Task Force has been meeting in Washington discussing a set of proposals meant to reduce gun violence. Those proposals set to go to the president, according to the vice president, on Tuesday. And as the Iowa legislative session approaches, their efforts in the state to alter Iowa's gun laws by various lawmakers, either by tightening or loosening restrictions on buying and carrying firearms. Iowa legislative leaders who spoke at a press briefing this Wednesday said they have no mandate to enact broad-based state legislation aimed at addressing gun violence and school safety. We have three guests with us to discuss this issue. Jeff Burkett, president of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, an NRA affiliate here in Iowa. Reverend Carlos Jane, coordinator and lobbyist for Iowa, Iowans for Gun Safety. Brian Gardner, the sheriff of Linn County, is with us as well. And we have a number of you who want to get in on our discussion, and I hope you will. We want to have as much time for callers, emailers this hour. First of all, let me put this to Jeff Burkett of the Iowa Firearms Coalition. What I hear in this debate, Jeff, is those arguing for stricter gun controls are saying, sure, we have a Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, but we have plenty of other rights guaranteed by the Constitution that do come with restrictions in the interests of safety. For instance, it is not lawful to yell fire in a theater, supposing there is no fire. Do you understand why some people have a problem with the NRA's, with your group's insistence that it is an absolute right to carry any kind of firearms?
The answer to that is both yes and no. I mean, on one hand, I understand that people have their opinions, but at the other hand, I'm educated and researched enough on this topic that I'm pretty, you know, solid on where I stand on the issue. I agree with your comparison there. In fact, I like comparing or making more analogous our Second Amendment rights to our First Amendment rights than some of the other analogies that get made. Mm-hmm. The one important distinction, however, is the right to keep and bear arms is the one right enumerated in our Constitution that says shall not be infringed. And so that's the part that constantly gets overlooked, and there's a reason that wording was put in there by our founding fathers.
Donald is with us from Nevada. Number of callers. We want to get to as many as possible. 1-866-780-9100. Donald in Nevada. What's your view on this? Do you see any common ground that could be etched out of it?
Well, I think that concerning the assault type weapons, I think there is a way. And I guess my idea would be to divide assault weapons and hunting-type weapons by removable clips. If the gun has a removable clip, then it's classified as an assault-type weapon, and those with built-in magazines are not. And for the assault-type guns, you would be allowed to own them, but you would be required to have them stored and used on a licensed and inspected gun range. And you would not be able to remove it from there. But you could still own as many of them as you wanted to and shoot them on ranges as much as you wanted to. Hunting type guns could be kept at home. And it was mentioned about confiscating the assault type guns before, and that probably is not going to work, but in this case, the owners, current owners of assault-type guns would be given some amount of time, a year or something, to get them to gun ranges.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
okay.
After that, they they wouldn't be allowed to have them off the range.
Donald, thank you for your thinking on this. Let's bounce that off our law enforcement representative here, Brian Gardner. What do you think of that suggestion?
Well, I think logistically it poses some problems. First, you'd have to be able to find a gun range willing to take in the weapons and store them for you. You know, some of these weapons run into the thousands of dollars, and while you'd still be able to own them but have them stored someplace else would probably cause some heartburn for these weapons owners. So I understand what Donald is saying, and I hear his proposition, but logistically I'm just not so sure that it's a workable solution at this point in time.
And Jeff Burkett of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, that's a non-starter with you, I imagine.
Well, just to address it quickly, because obviously you know where I stand on that issue, what we're talking about and what the gentleman described, what most people call an assault rifle and what most people refer to as a hunting rifle functionally act no different. And that's the problem, is that people don't even understand the technicalities in this. Most of what went through in the assault rifle ban back in the 90s were purely cosmetic things that actually made no difference in terms of the function of the firearm.
Mm-hmm. Does a hunter take out a weapon with a clip that has 30-plus rounds in it, though?
Yes. There are many coyote hunters here in Iowa that do that. Absolutely. Okay. And in other states where you can use common 223 or 5.56 caliber weapons for other types of hunting, it's not uncommon.
Donald, thank you for your call from Nevada.
Yeah, I have something on that myself, and that is that perhaps elements of what was suggested about these guns.
Oh, this is Reverend Jane. Sorry.
Yes.
I was getting my voices mixed up. Okay,
okay.
Go ahead.
Does border on the idea of confiscation. That's not something we're interested in moving forward. And I think maybe even the assault rifle ban is something that we should not be dealing with as much as that of limiting ammunition purchases or the amount of ammunition that you have available to you in a gun. That's probably the better way to handle that. The last time we had an assault weapon ban, it really didn't, Jeff says, it didn't get rid of that many guns. So if you're going to end up with a lot of exceptions, what good is the ban going to do? So it's something that has to be looked at very carefully. I know a lot of people want that. A lot of people like to go and take the ones from the people that already have them. I think, as the sheriff said, that would be something that would inflame more than it would do any good.
In fact, Representative Dan Mulbauer, a Democrat from Manila, has recently taken a stance on gun control that provoked a heated response along these lines from gun rights advocates and the NRA. In a taped phone interview with the Daily Times Herald in Carroll, Iowa, State Representative Dan Mulbauer made statements in support of confiscating high-capacity firearms from Iowans. Here it is.
The semi-automatics and all those, we can't have those running around out here. Those are not hunting weapons. Those, you know, assault rifles.
So we should ban those in Iowa?
We should ban them in Iowa.
Now, if we ban them, should it be a retroact? Should it be a ban going forward where you can't buy them going forward? Or should there be some mechanism to confiscate them from people who already purchased them legally?
We need to get them off the streets illegally, and even if you have them, I think we need to start taking them. We can't have those out there, because if they're out in, they're just going to get circulated around to the wrong people.
The Daily Times Herald in Carroll also reported that Mulbauer owns a shotgun, a 22, and a rifle, and a 22 pistol. Jeff Burkett of the Iowa Firearms Coalition, I understand that you've spoken with Representative Mulbauer.
That's correct.
Was it after this statement?
It was.
Uh-huh. Well, what sense did you get there from this position of confiscating these types of weapons?
Well, in my conversation with Representative Mulbauer, I think he expressed a little bit of regret for being quite as vocal as he was in what was recorded. That said, we followed his votes on the House floor. I've listened to him numerous times during debate on the House floor. And we know generally where he is on the issue. I mean, we don't see eye to eye on firearms ownership and Second Amendment rights. I don't know. We could dogpile him. I could sick all of my membership after him to phone call him and email him. That wouldn't do any good, I don't think. We're looking to go into this legislative session trying to meet on common ground where we can sit down and we can have a reasonable mm-hmm. discussion without infringing on people's Second Amendment rights.
So you're open for common ground, the discussion, but you seem to not want any changes. So where do you move? Common ground tells me you'll move to some ground that you are not right now or that you have. What ground do you share with those, for instance, Reverend Jane, that would be common?
Well, Reverend Jane being, a retired pastor now, I think the first immediate common ground that he and I could probably find on this issue is the mental health issue. And not only that, but the issue of violence and violent images being subjected to our children. We have children in a culture being brought up in a culture now where they're playing violent video games. They're awarded points and being desensitized. For blowing people's heads off in this virtual world, and we've got a lot of problems on this topic of violence in the schools outside of the firearms issue that I think there's plenty of common ground on, okay. And I think that's where we start.
And another reminder, we're going to address the media violence as a part of this issue, also mental health specifically in upcoming shows here on River to River. Let's go to Ankeny. Darren is with us. Hi, Darren. What's on your mind as you hear this conversation?
Hi, Darren. I'm Darren. Hi, Ben. Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
A few points that I mentioned to your producer. The first thing I'd like to bring up is the Second Amendment was written during a time of muzzle-loading black powder muskets, and to claim that it today confers upon me the uninfringable right to bear anything that can be called an arm is simply ridiculous. Now, I view these guns in three types. There's the anti-criminal weapon, pistols, hunting arms, and then the anti-military weapons. The first two can be considered to have a value in the community, but the third one, the anti-military weapon, the risk that it poses to the community is just too great to be offset by the pleasure of ownership.
Okay. You would want to have that debate, and you think Americans would side with you, Darren?
I don't know that they all will today, but I think eventually they would.
Okay, Darren and Ankeny, a response from Jeff Burkett.
Well, the first problem you have is that some of the acceptable firearms that he have described have already been used in violent massacres. So right there, immediately you run into a problem. And also the other issue that the other point that I take issue with is the muzzle loader and what type of technology was available at the time that this was implemented. When our forefathers wrote the Constitution, first of all, they weren't ignorant. These were very educated men, arguably much more educated and tempered than probably some of our best writers today. And they understood the principle of putting in an amendment to the Constitution that was going to protect us from tyranny. We're not talking about broad arms here. If you want to talk about this, the right to keep and bear arms, the modern-day musket is the M16 in the U.S. military, which is very common to the AR-15. And they already have a strategic advantage in design over the common AR-15 that I can own. And then when you get into all the things like rocket launchers and hand grenades and the things that I can't own as an individual, we as the people in private ownership are severely limited and unable to maintain and own those things compared to what they were in back in those times. If you do research back in history, there were people, it wasn't terribly uncommon, I don't want to say it was common, but there were instances where people had cannons at their home in that era.
Okay.
So it sounds like we have already limited the right to bear arms. Why would we not continue to do so?
Because it's an inherent right.
Ben, I have something on that.
Okay.
Have we already limited that inherent right?
Darren.
We have, and we want to regain those rights back.
Many other people wanting to get in on this discussion. Darren, thank you for Ankeny.
Go ahead, Reverend.
Reverend Jane, you wanted to
jump
in here.
Yes, the talk about this as though we want to have weapons here of such that we're somehow getting ready to possibly confront our own government if we decide that it is tyrannical really scares me to beat the heck. I know there are a lot of people out there who fear that they might lose their Second Amendment rights and that the government might come to their house, back up the truck, and take their guns away. And they also fear somehow that there are other tyrannical things that are going to be happening. Where is this fear come from? Why cannot we?
That's a good point, Reverend Jane. Let's put that to Jeff Burkett. What exactly are your fears if we talk past the Constitution here and go exactly to the fears of the members of your group? If assault weapons are banned, for instance, if a magazine size is limited, tell me the fears. What happens that is so fearful to you?
Well, I mean, what are we talking about? Are we talking about an inherent right to keep and bear arms?
Let's talk about a ban on assault weapons and a limit on magazine size. What is the follow-through fear that you have with that limited regulation ban on a type of weapon and magazine?
Well, from a fundamental premise, it's not a bill of wants and needs. It's a bill of rights. So the first premise here that is being undermined is the fact that we have the right to own these things. So the fear is just the irrational mindset that has been developed that these type of solutions are really going to reduce violence. I mean, do we really think that in a case, for instance, in Newtown, had he had 10-round capacity magazines instead of 30-round, that we would have had a significant change in the death toll?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we do see, mm-hmm. let me just briefly interject this as well. What we do see is in these type of mass shooting situations, when you have somebody armed on site, able to meet the threat, whether it's a faculty member, whether it's a concealed weapons permit holder, your death toll is about 2.5. When you don't have anybody on site, like you have in Newtown, and you have to rely on law enforcement to make it I don't know what good law enforcement response time is in my area. Mm-hmm. I live in Prairie City. It could be 15 minutes. I think in the urban areas, I think 2 minutes is probably pretty good response time. I'll let the sheriff speak to that. But your death toll is typically much more in the range of 15.
Okay. Speak to that, Brian Gardner. But before we go back to the phones, more guns make us safer.
You're asking me that question?
As described by Jeff Burkett right there, in terms of response time, in terms of arming people in schools.
Well, the concern that I have with that is I do think that if you're going to put armed responders in schools, that you're better served to have them be truly law enforcement officials. But as we talked earlier, I think the cost is prohibitive. My concern is then is if you arm administrators or you arm whoever in the schools, the amount of training that they receive, what you give to them to be able to allow them to defend themselves and others. As we've all discussed it previously, in the current shall issue bill, the training requirement is pretty much non-existent. You can go online on the internet, you can do an internet course, you can literally never held a firearm, never fired a firearm, and be able to have the proper certification necessary for you to come to my window and me issue you a weapons carry permit. Mm-hmm. So I think if we're going to arm administrators in schools, if we're going to arm other people within schools, that you really need to look at this training requirement seriously and provide them good, solid training and not just a guise that you're providing training when, in fact, it's non-existent.
Sheriff Gardner, Iowa Gun Owners, that's an advocacy group in Des Moines, is pushing for legislation that would get rid of gun-free zones at schools across Iowa, allow people with permits to carry a gun inside a school, changing Iowa code, which now I believe makes it a felony if Iowans with a permit carry a gun in schools. A good idea?
Well, I think that we hear of many examples. Let's use sporting events as an example of where you get people in the stands have a little bit more anxiety with what's going on with the kids playing in the various sports. And you have parents confronting each other. You have violence. You have people threatening coaches. You have people threatening referees. You have people threatening each other. And now we're going to allow them, if we get rid of these weapons-free zones, we're going to allow them to freely carry weapons. I have concern whether that's the proper thing to do.
I think it's vigilantism in the schools. You know, there was a time when we had vigilantism in this country, and it didn't work out because there was retribution that went back and forth. It was kind of like the gangs of today. We can't go for that kind of stuff. We don't want our schools to be places where there possibility. We don't even it would vary too much from place to place, as the sheriff said, with the training, and we don't even know what the motivation is of the people who would want to do this. Sometimes people are just seeking power by having guns. I mean, this happens with people in all kinds of life and all kinds of things. We do not want this. We want some kind of control of how this is going to work. And our forefathers said the rights will not be impinged, but they did not say, and the Supreme Court says, that there's nothing about that says that the rights cannot be altered. With the latest Supreme Court decisions, that's one of the things they said, that the Second Amendment rights stand supreme, except that it can be altered to provide for some kinds of restrictions.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes left. I wanted to go around to our invited guests and get a closing a comment on this with this framework. What are your hopes for these recommendations to be coming out of the task force passed on to the president? We expect on Tuesday, after hearing all sides, including the NRA's efforts. What are the hopes you have for recommendations? Let's go to Jeff Burkett quickly, and less than a minute, so we get around to everyone. Please, Jeff.
Sure. You know, we're not going to deviate from an organizational perspective of our path of restoring long-eroded rights for self-defense. We definitely want to come to the table and meet with these people on common ground, and I think there's definitely an issue of violence. We aren't insinuating that armed guards is the only solution to this. We need a multi-pronged approach, and we're looking forward to those conversations without infringing on the rights of law-abiding Americans.
Reverend Carlos Jane, what do you hope for hearing next week from Washington?
I hope that there is at least some really strong things about mental health services and providing funding and ways to really improve this in the nation. I would look for universal background checks to be the thrust of the main thing that we would have with respect to finally getting a handle on weapons purchasing, buying, and using all around the states, and then something to do with the limits for ammunition purchases and uses. Okay. And then the biggest thing maybe
very quickly
over that, research and public information of gun deaths, which has heretofore been kept out of the public by actions of the NRA and the Congress.
Okay, 30 seconds for you, Brian Gardner, to finish off our discussion.
Sure. Sheriff, I think what we're dealing with major, mostly here is a mental health crisis that we're experiencing here in our nation, certainly in our community. We need to find ways to keep weapons out of the hands of people who have no no reason to be accessing them. So resolve the mental health issue, and I think that a lot of this will go away.
Sheriff Brian Gardner of Linn County, Reverend Carlos Jane of Iowans for Gun Safety, Jeff Burkett, president of Iowa, the Iowa Firearms Coalition. Thank you, gentlemen, all for joining us in this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to all our listeners who joined in. We certainly did not get to very many of the calls and emails that we had. We hope to continue this discussion. River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden and Emily Woodbury. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.